Support for WHYY comes from the Philadelphia Speaker Series, presented by Widener University, bringing to Philadelphia some of the world's most interesting people. The series returns to the Kimmel Center next season with a lineup featuring Leon Panetta, Captain Mark Kelly and former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, futurist Michio Kaku, and CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Sanjay Gupta. PhiladelphiaSpeakerSeries.org, sponsored by the Haverford Trust Company.
2 weeks ago, all eyes were on the stretch of track in Philadelphia where Amtrak train 188 derailed, killing eight, injuring dozens of others. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. As federal investigators continue to dissect this month's fatal train derailment, the lawsuits are coming on fast. Still, it will likely be years before any case wraps up, as WHYY's Aaron Moselle explains.
Six lawsuits have already been filed in Philadelphia on behalf of passengers injured in the deadly crash that killed eight people. Hundreds more could follow.
There's no rush. You know, these things can be filed up to 2 years, and many people, I'm sure, have not retained lawyers.
Attorney Evan Aidman is one of the lawyers who has been hired. He says Amtrak may wait until the statute of limitations runs out before it starts looking at possible settlements. Federal law caps Amtrak damages at $200 million no matter how many lawsuits are eventually filed.
How do they pay out claims before the 2 years with the issue of that $200 million being exhausted prematurely?
Whether Amtrak goes that route or not, recent history may support Aidman's timeline. In 2013, four people were killed after a passenger train derailed in the Bronx after blowing a sharp curve. 2 years later, with reportedly few, if any, delays, lawyers are so-called trial-ready for what's now a consolidated case that includes more than 50 individual lawsuits. In Philadelphia, Amtrak 188 was carrying 238 passengers. The vast majority were injured after the speeding train jumped off the tracks in Port Richmond. The National Transportation Safety Board's ongoing investigation is expected to take a year to complete. I'm Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
We have a correction this evening. During yesterday's program, we reported that the proposed merger of Charter and Time Warner Cable would create a company with more TV subscribers than Comcast. Actually, Comcast would still have more subscribers than the combined rival company, and we regret the error. A former employee of the Philadelphia School District is accused of steering a nearly $1 million contract to friends and family. Details from WHYY's Kevin McCory.
A Philadelphia grand jury has recommended criminal charges against Priscilla Wright, who until January was the school district's manager of small business development. In 2013, as the city reeled from the closure of 23 public schools, the grand jury says Wright used her influence to take advantage of the situation. In an elaborate orchestration, she pushed a $900,000 contract to an unsophisticated trucking vendor tasked with transporting supplies and furniture from the closed schools to storage facilities. Around that vendor, Wright connected a series of subcontractors who were actually friends and family members acting under business aliases. Prosecutors say that's a clear breach of conflict of interest. Douglas Rhodes is the assistant district attorney working on the case.
And because it was such a large project, if you were somebody in the know over at the school district, you would know that if you looked like a qualified bidder, you were probably going to get a piece of the action.
Rhodes says Wright's plan unraveled as the trucking firm began to figure out it was stuck doing the grunt work without realizing the bulk of the profits.
Ultimately, you have somebody here just being very opportunistic, capitalizing, I think, on a very dire situation for the school district, and that's a shame.
The Philadelphia School District declined comment. For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCory.
Over the past year, city officials have doubled down on bringing more solar power to Philadelphia. City Council pledged 20,000 additional rooftop panels by the year 2025, though there's still a long way to go. WHYY's Jessica McDonald reports on a new ranking and a plan from the governor to encourage the solar sector.
Out of the nation's top 65 cities, Philadelphia is 26th in total solar capacity and 41st in per capita solar generation. The advocacy group Penn Environment released the rankings. Executive Director David Mazur says that's far behind places like Wilmington, Delaware, and Newark, New Jersey.
Philadelphia's poor ranking is really just a reflection of if we create the policies and bolster up this job-creating opportunity that's good for environment, we can really reap the benefit, and if you don't, you'll miss out.
The group backs Governor Tom Wolf's plan to spend $225 million on alternative energy, including $50 million for solar.
The only energy source I've ever found that people actually quote-unquote love, the only one, is solar.
John Hanger, Secretary of Planning and Policy for Wolf, says those funds would relaunch the PA Sunshine program.
Solar power is going to reshape the energy industry across the United States. And the question for Pennsylvania is, are we going to lead or are we going to actually be at the back of the pack?
Also supporting the proposal is the Electricians Union, Local 98, which has been a national leader in teaching workers how to install solar panels. Training director for the union, Michael Neal, says with proper support from the state and city, solar could generate about 200 jobs. I'm Jessica McDonald, WHYY News.
This disclosure, Local 98 represents union engineers at WHYY. And while Pennsylvania is looking to raise its solar profile regarding housing, some Delaware residents are engaged in a different challenge. At the lower end of the income spectrum, the struggle to find affordable housing can be daunting. And now, in the southern part of the state, a group of residents is taking matters and tools into their own hands, as WHYY's Mark Eichmann reports.
I'm not an outside girl. I like to stay inside, away from the bugs and everything else.
Amanda West is a single mother of three, and she's building five homes in a bit more than a year. Not by herself, she and four others are now constructing her home and also will put together houses for each member of the group.
It's a lot of work that goes into it. It's not easy.
West is part of the Shared Build program through the Milford Housing Development Corporation. With the help of a construction manager, they have pledged to build the five homes while still holding full-time jobs.
They are putting 65% of the labor into their homes.
Russ Huxtable is the chief operating officer of Milford Housing Development Corp. MHDC gets funding through the Department of Agriculture's Rural Development Program to help participants build their own places.
They're putting in work on Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays, and they don't have a day off.
While professionals install the wiring and plumbing, the future homeowners do the bulk of the work. They framed walls, nailed shingles, and invested lots of sweat in their new homes.
The average sweat equity that our families are seeing is close to $35,000. It's a full-time wage for a year. Most of our families are making less than $35,000, and that's what they're doing by building their home part-time.
That sweat equity funds the down payment on their homes, and participants get a low interest rate to pay off the rest of their mortgage. The program is available for families making 80% and below median income in a rural area. In Delaware, that includes just about all of Sussex and Kent counties, except for Dover. Building the homes takes long hours of hard work and heavy lifting. But for West and the others, it's worth it.
I'm hoping that 30, 40 years from now, you know, my kids, they'll be happy with the work that I've done. And you know, they want to go out and help other people do the same thing.
Over the past 50 years, 50,000 homes have been built this way nationwide. Since 1996, MHDC has helped neighbors build nearly 200 of them. From the Delaware Desk, I'm Mark Eichmann, WHYY News.
Turning to this evening's headlines, Rick Santorum announced today that he's running for president. A favorite among religious conservatives, Santorum came in second in the race for the GOP presidential nomination 4 years ago. He says his experience could pay dividends the second time around. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie says more than 300 homes have now been acquired by the state under a post-Superstorm Sandy buyout program. Christie marked the latest milestone of the Blue Acres program today with a press conference in Manville along the Raritan and Millstone Rivers at the site of a newly purchased home that had been flooded repeatedly. The program seeks to buy homes from willing sellers in areas that have been plagued by flooding and return the land to open spaces. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has approved more than $100 million for that program. Rutgers University is getting the job of analyzing how well the tax incentives aimed at attracting and keeping businesses in New Jersey are actually working. The school is to produce reports over the next 3 years addressing whether the business incentives are creating jobs, along with other topics. State Senator Ray Lesniak, a Democrat, has been calling for the state to provide more detailed information measuring how effective those tax breaks are. 82 degrees, rain falling on Independence Mall. It's 6:16. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. A severe thunderstorm watch remains in effect until 7 this evening, and then a 40% chance of showers overnight, low 70 degrees. Tomorrow, expect intervals of sun and clouds, a 40% chance of precipitation, Thursday's high 88. Friday, mostly sunny, noticeably less humid, high 86 degrees. To the weekend, Saturday, sunny, high in the mid-80s. Ahead to Monday, clouding up with a 50% chance of showers or thunderstorms, high 80 degrees. Still ahead, as more and more bookstores close down, authors turn to novel ways to promote their novels.
You have your wine and cheese book club. You have your dessert book club. You have your Sunday morning brunch book club.
Don't turn the page until Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
The Franklin Institute supports WHYY and is now featuring the exhibit Genghis Khan, Bring the Legend to Life. From the lush grasslands of Mongolia to the steps of the Franklin Institute, Genghis Khan. Visitors can enter the tents, battlegrounds, and marketplaces of a vanished world and see more than 200 rare artifacts, including gold jewelry, weaponry, silk robes, monuments, and documents nearly 1,000 years old. Genghis Khan at the Franklin Institute, where the legend comes to life. Learn more at fi.edu.
The WHYY Speaker Series. Meet your favorite public media personalities.
This is Terry Gross. Join me at the Wilmington Grand Opera House on Sunday, June 7th for Off Air with Fresh Air. I'll talk about interviewing, play clips of conversations that went particularly well or poorly, describe what happens behind the scenes of the show, and you'll get to turn the tables and ask me a few questions.
For tickets and more information, whyy.org/speakers.
Many hundreds are dying crossing the Mediterranean. A researcher who studied the migrants for years says we shouldn't be surprised.
We see these very dramatic pictures in the news these days of sinking boats. And it's very easy to forget we've seen this type of crisis occurring again and again over the past decade.
And he says there's profit in it. I'm Renee Montaigne, the Mediterranean migration industry, tomorrow on Morning Edition.
Weekday mornings on WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Philadelphia proves to be a better draw at retaining its college graduates than even Boston. Surprising? Well, not to Deborah Diamond, president of Campus Philly. Deborah, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here.
So I, for one, am surprised.
Yeah, a lot of people are, even though Philadelphia's done a good job of retaining college students over the last 10 years. What's changed the most in Philadelphia is who is staying after they graduate.
So is it primarily college students who did their primary education in the area or those from out of town?
What we're seeing is an increase in what we call non-native college students, students who come from outside the region to attend school here, a real increase in those students staying after they graduate.
Campus Philly doesn't merely conduct studies. Talk about the organization's efforts toward that end.
Yeah, our mission is to connect college students to Philadelphia in ways that matter to them so that they stay after they graduate. One is the professional opportunity. They need a job, a way to make a living, whether that's to start something of their own or be employed. And so we run a really robust internship program and a lot of programming to introduce students to the industries in Philadelphia. And the other side of the coin is they need to like where they live. And so we introduce them to the other side of Philadelphia, arts and culture, the communities that are here, the neighborhoods, so that they have anchors off campus that can keep them here.
They stay perhaps in our region, but that doesn't necessarily specifically mean Philadelphia. And when you talk about the Philadelphia challenges, education is one of them, but more on the primary level. And when these millennials and young grads entertain the notion of having families, that's where the challenge comes in also.
Yeah, I mean, that's been documented in research that I know others have done, that when you see these recent grads who stay in the city of Philadelphia, you know, what happens when they have families and do they start to consider moving? You know, we are a regional organization and we see that those who choose to live in the suburbs and work in the city or vice versa are contributing to the overall economy regionally, and that's important. I think we're also seeing in the movement of parents to invest in their neighborhood city schools and create a culture around investing in neighborhood city schools. A lot of that movement is coming from these recent college graduates who are a few years out, who are starting families, and some don't even have kids yet or school-age kids, but they're working on the schools in their neighborhoods with an eye towards the future. And I think that spirit of doing it yourself, if you want to see it done, is something that really animates this generation.
I found it interesting that your organization also cites a dividend for students who graduate here and then go elsewhere.
When students who are educated here get to know the city, have a great time here, go forth to cities across the country and across the world, they're ambassadors for Philadelphia in a really powerful way. And it's one reason that Philadelphia, I think, is now in the national and international spotlight with things like the DNC and the World Meeting of Families and BIO, because we have these connections that are often started and grounded in our universities.
Talk about the other partners in your organization.
The city's always been a critical partner and was there at our founding and continues to be a supporter. And we're really an economic development strategy for the city of Philadelphia. We have a corporate membership program, businesses who are working to create that talent pipeline for themselves. And because we partner with more than 30 colleges and universities, we can connect employers to an incredibly wide range of talented students. And then our cultural partners, as part of our open arts program, really comprise the sort of three legs of the stool.
Deborah Diamond, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you very much.
Deborah Diamond is president of Campus Philly. Once upon a time, publishers had budgets to send novelists out on the road to promote their books. Well, now that idea is little more than a fairy tale, even at major publishing houses. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that today's authors have to invent their own marketing gimmicks.
15 years ago, when Nomi Eve published her first novel called The Family Orchard with Knopf, she became something of an expert on airports and hotels.
Showing up at bookstores, doing a reading, doing a signing, and then jetting to the next city. There was a lot of jetting to the next city.
By the time she published her second book, called Henna House, 14 years later, the world had changed. No more jet setting. Now she has become something of an expert on book clubs.
You have your wine and cheese book club. You have your dessert book club. You have your Sunday morning brunch book club. Which is bagels.
In 6 months, she has vowed to eat her way through 100 book clubs in public libraries, country clubs, synagogues, high schools, and living rooms. It's a gimmick to win over readers one glass of white wine at a time. At this book club in Rydal, a suburb of Philadelphia, a half dozen women met in a backyard next to the pool to ask Eve about her novel. This is book club number 91 in the 100 book club marathon. And she tends to get the same sets of questions at each one, including, how did you research your novel about Jews in early 20th century Yemen?
I sat down as part of my research with a Yemenite Jewish gentleman, and I was interviewing him about his childhood, you know, in the mountains of North Yemen. And all of a sudden, he's telling me about men in the community riding donkeys to go visit prostitutes in the big city. I make that kind of stuff up all the time. I was so thrilled. He completely validated my, like, body imagination.
Right. Eve's novel, Henna House, is published by Scribner. It's a major player in the book world. But even so, if you're a mid-list author, publishers will not give you much help selling your book. Authors have to invent their own marketing. So they slip books into doctors' waiting rooms or send everyone they know invitations to their characters' weddings and notices of their funerals. One woman wrote a novel under a man's name, then asked her husband to impersonate her at speaking engagements. A group of writers calling themselves the Liars Club do an event called Noir in the Bar, where they read detective novels aloud while people drink. The Liars Club has also sought the attention of the most captive audience by printing toilet paper with the club logo and then secretly stalking the bathrooms at writers' conferences. Novelist Kelly Simmons writes women's fiction, and she works in marketing on the side, and she says stunts like these get mixed results.
Even though I'm good at thinking up ideas, I come up with all kinds of crazy ideas, and some I even execute, but that doesn't mean they're going to work. You know what I mean? I don't have unlimited budgets to throw at the problem the way some of my clients do.
Simmons once tried to market her novel, The Birdhouse, published by Simon & Schuster, by printing long excerpts of the book as brochures, this is on her own dime, and then handing them out on the Amtrak train between Philadelphia and New York. Then she'd sit down with the passengers for an impromptu discussion during the commute. It didn't work so well.
Most of the people on the trains were men. I hadn't really thought about that, you know? So I met a lot of men and told them to give it to their wives. Stupid, but it's clear that my type of writing doesn't really appeal to the men riding the Amtrak train. So.
Simmons' next novel, to be called One More Day, will be published by a small independent house called Source Books. That publisher has already started to think up a marketing plan for the release next year. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
This note, next week on Newsworks Tonight and Morning Edition, Peter Crimmins will be reporting from the Philadelphia Orchestra's European tour. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. You can listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Philadelphia's City Council is scheduled to make a big decision tomorrow on the future form of the gallery in Center City. We'll take a look at the plans on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers School of Business at Camden encourages working professionals in the region to take the next step in their career by earning a master's degree. The Rutgers University Professional MBA and the Professional Master's in Accounting degrees are accelerated programs designed for working professionals with classes held on Saturdays in Mount Laurel. An information session is at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, June 4th at the Cherry Hill Library. Details at pmba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-2700.